Far side of Kuznetsov. Schultz just blazing right in there and didn't even hesitate. Got it here for Ovechkin. He scores!
Oliver Ekman-Larsson with a wrister through traffic. Blocked in front. Rebound side of the net for Pettersson. Stopped by Samsonov. Then a rebound. They score. It's Pettersson again.
Stutzel on the turn. Gets it across. Quick shot. Scores! Either this was tipped or this is Norris. I'm not sure Norris took the shot. Either way, Ottawa's got a one goal lead.
TSN 1200.
Well, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. 8:12 here on a stormy Monday morning on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Glad you're along for this day. JR, Simmer, and Hammer with you. Soon to be joined by TSN's Dave Poulin as the snow wind has certainly picked up here in Ottawa. I'm sure to wherever, well, actually, I was going to say wherever you're listening right now, but now that we're in an online world where people are listening all around the world, that may not be the case. But in our little burg right now, the storm has hit, and it's going to continue. And we're into the worst of it now, and likely for the next few hours, this is going to remain the same. So again, the advice is, if you don't have to, try to stay off the roads. But I understand for some of you, travel is essential, work is essential. If you do have to get somewhere, you are going to need some extra time, but please be careful as you make your way around the city. All right, some highlights from around the NHL, and of course, the Sens' big comeback win over the Oilers, so things are feeling pretty good in Sens' land right now, and probably the exact opposite out in Edmonton. To talk about it, we welcome to the show a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to TSN's Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very snowy, gentlemen. I'll give you the weather report that's happening a little west of you. And I would say in the last hour to 90 minutes, there's probably been 6 inches of snow here. And it's the volume in the last, just in the last couple hours, because my paper was here, but there were no tire tracks. None. No footprints, no tire tracks. Yeah. So I thought, there's no way I'm going to get my paper. And I looked out and I'm like, are you kidding me? It's here. This is great. And then I'm looking, there's no trace of it. It's like it dropped in from the sky. That's how much snow has fallen in the last 90 minutes. So.
And Pooley, please stop being American. How many centimeters?
Oh, you know what? That's a really hard one for me. It is.
I'm teasing.
Tell you, Silver, it's like I moved away from here in 1978, right? And so I never caught the front end of the metric system, ever. And so I have no chance on that. I have no chance of telling you how many centimeters. It's quite a bit.
Sounds better in inches, to be honest with you.
Yeah, my neighbor came out and tried, and he was like, nah, you know what? That's not working. It's not working. He came out and gave it a good effort, and he was like pretending he was going to go to work at one point, and then I think he just said, nah, you know what? That's not going to work for me.
Now, you know what? All of us in Ottawa and the rest of Canada are hoping that, and I know Mel Lastman's no longer the mayor, but any chance the Army gets called in so we can continue that joke about Toronto?
I don't think so, because they're not worried about the kids going to school anymore. Right. I hate to tell all my friends who have kids, but boy, the first day back, and it's not going to happen.
No, indeed. All right, well, let's talk hockey from the weekend, and let's start with the Sens-Edmonton game from Saturday. I don't know about you, Dave. I didn't have a whole lot of faith that the Sens down 3-1 after two, and I don't know why I felt this way. Maybe it was because it was a pretty flat second period. I didn't think they were going to come back, but not only did they come back and lead the game, then gave up the lead and then retook the lead, but that was a very spirited comeback. What did that comeback say to you about where the Ottawa Senators are at right now?
I'm going to take you into the locker room, into the coach's room after the second period, JR. And I'm DJ Smith, and I've got my whole crew in there. I've got my video coach in there, my goalie coach. I've got everybody with me. And there's silence, and you're down 3-1, and it hasn't gone well. And I look around the room, and I say, tell me what we need to do in the third. I need to know. Tell me what we need. I want something from everybody in here. If you got two or three things, give them to me. And I made a list of 10 things that a coach would have said to them, that an assistant coach would have said, and they got all 10 of them. And it's really remarkable. And so I'll take you through them. It starts with somebody says, we need a goal in the first 5 minutes. We got a goal in the first 5 minutes. Somebody said, we need some unexpected scoring. Got that? Unexpected scoring. We need speed. That first goal, Formanton and Gaudette, great speed. We need the D to chip in. Artem Zub gets the fourth goal. We need to make the Oilers doubt. That happened with the first goal. It happened more with the second goal. It happened even more with that with the third goal of the period. Okay, now there's sucks. And somebody says, okay, if we get all those things and we get a lead and they score, we need to respond. That was the response to the Nurse goal. And then the obvious one, we need the bigs to be good. The bigs were good. They scored when they had to on the power play. We need special teams. There's your power play goal. Hey, we need everybody pulling on the rope here. 10 different players had points in the third period. And the obvious one, and Simmer's not going to let me give 10 points without saying this, we're going to need a save at some point. And they got a save.
What were the 10 points in the Oilers' dressing room after the game?
There weren't 10. There weren't 10. There were more than 10, and they all started with an expletive. But, you know, those are all sort of common things that you would need to happen in order to have a comeback like that on the road, and because you've got so many different, I don't want to say excuses, but you've got so many variables the coaches are trying to weigh now in this craziness of, well, we haven't played, you know, it's our second game back, it's our third game back, we're traveling. You had so many ways you could justify things not going well, and yet that's a perfect list, guys, and they got every single thing. They checked every single box on that list, and that's what it's going to take from this team. I mean, this isn't a team, you know, and let's face it, the team they were playing might have just gone in and said, okay, you know, Leon and Connor, we need you to be great in this third period, we're okay. And that's not the case with Ottawa. It's never going to be because, you know, you won't have two of the top leading scorers in the league on one team. Virtually no one does other than the Edmonton Oilers. And yet, for them to be that balanced coming back, that's exactly what it's going to take. And maybe, you know, maybe we're watching what we watched last year. I mean, last year I picked out a specific game, and that was the Winnipeg Jets game on a Saturday night, I think, when they were 2-12-1, and they turned it around the rest of the way. And, you know, who knows where they're at right now exactly with that. But, you know, this has been a good run. It's been a healthy run. It was a 6-2 loss versus Vancouver, I think, when I look at this year and say, okay, since that point, they're 7-3-1. And maybe that's the point. Now they keep rolling. And because of all the disarray I talked about around the league, in their own locker room, they're going, hey, that was great. Why not? Let's just have fun and keep going. And the energy level, you know, the shots of the bench are great. The energy level with the comeback like that, the energy it gives you is much more than a normal win going out and taking the lead and dominating through a game. Coming back against Edmonton and making Edmonton doubt is even better. And because you know that's something you're controlling that's affecting the other team.
Would Dave Poulin's helmet back in the day have fit Josh Norris if he came to you and you were sitting on the bench?
It would have, but he wouldn't have liked the look of it. It was the old Cooper 2000.
Yeah.
You either wore that or you didn't, right?
That was
current Brian Propp and I stuck with it, and everybody else hated it.
That was a hilarious moment, actually. And the fact that he went out in the next shift and actually scored a goal
it really was.
It just goes to show you, and you talked about you know, the shots of the bench and even after other goals. It's a really loose group, and it looks like a really kind of a tight group. And I think it really speaks to, you know, there's a lot of youth on the team with a mix of some veterans. But you can just tell sometimes by looking at a team whether that's a cohesive unit, regardless of what the actual standings tell you. And that looks like a cohesive but loose team that Ottawa's got right now.
Well, that's the beauty of growing together, JR. I mean, that's the opportunity you have. And I've been on a team like that, a young team in that grew together, and you go through things at the same time, and everybody's in the same stage of their own life off the ice, and so you get to hang out more and you get to do more things together just because you're at the same stage, you know. And that's a really important part. And at the same time, as I say that, through that group you still need your sprinkle of maturity both on and off the ice. You need the babysitters, and you need guys to know what to say in the locker room when you're down 3-1 if the coaches don't come in right away. And you need all those components. And right now, everyone is doing what they do best, in Ottawa. And there's still pieces to be fit into this equation. We know that. I mean, that's clear. And, you know, there were points, you know, for those first, you'd analyze the first three goals and you'd say, yeah, you know what? None of them were egregious, but man, you'd like to stop there. You know, you really would. And, you know, and I'd say more, I don't know, I'm not a goalie guy, I get all that, but more in the Yamamoto goal. I didn't like the Yamamoto goal. And there were people that didn't like maybe one of the other ones. I didn't like the Yamamoto goal. And, you know, I think he kind of got cut off and sort of threw Murray off a little bit. But I want to say there, you didn't get it. You bounced back and you won the game for your goaltender, too.
Is that Pooley? You see a lot of young, and I'll go back to Steve Yzerman. He made captain face of it, and they bring in all these veterans to support him. Would you say this is pretty unique when you watch a Brady Tkachuk, either from the outside or very close, is that you just don't see very often, in my estimation. I'm not saying you don't need some help, but I just haven't seen many athletes come along like this that are able to handle so many different things and just feel like they're born natural leaders.
It's pretty rare, and a lot of it goes to his pedigree and what he would have grown up with and what he would have seen and how much he would have been exposed to at an early age in life, even just by sitting at the breakfast table and listening. And, you know, I've got mixed feelings on this one, Simmer, because I've opposed naming young superstars captains. And, you know, and even Brady was a little bit older and that, you know, he'd had a year of college. But so much of it is their own maturity level. And the reason that I hesitate to name a really, really young player captain is all of the things that go off the ice with an NHL team that a good team, the captain's going to handle. And, you know, and not on ice stuff at all, but being able to grab a guy who's going through a tough situation, maybe at home or maybe, you know, with some extended family or maybe with a teammate where, you know, two teammates aren't getting along and, you know, you've got two teammates who are both older than you, not getting along, which I have had, and being able to step in with one or the other and say, hey, wake up here. And, you know, and so there's all these things that happen off the ice that I think put a tremendous load on a young star player. And very often, and there are exceptions, but very often you'd say, I don't want to put that responsibility on him, you know, like, even a Connor McDavid having to be the first one out at the podium now and comment on Evander Kane. I want Connor McDavid to worry about playing hockey. I don't want him worried about Evander Kane. And he's older, obviously. He's mid-20s now already. But, you know, that's the main reason. But you do get exceptions to it. And I think, you know, clearly that Brady Tkachuk is an exception to that rule.
Eric Brännström has certainly popped in the last couple of games, and there is a large portion of the fan base, Dave, that have become big fans of Eric Brännström and what he brings to the table. What have you seen of him, especially since he's come back into the lineup, and what is your long-term prognosis? Do you absolutely say, for sure, a guy who should be in Ottawa's lineup? Is he more so still maybe a placeholder for the here and now, and maybe eventually down the road, maybe will be a guy who gets squeezed out? Kind of what's your thought process on him right now?
You know, I'm still looking at a 22-year-old. That's what I'm starting with. And I'm still looking at a 22-year-old that has skills. And I'm as much about Jared. I think he's a really good fit if the group around him is right for him. And maybe you do need a partner for him. And maybe you do need, you know, in a perfect world, a Mark Methot partner for him. And, you know, and if you had that and it was a perfect partner, does his role change? Does his role expand? Because he does things that other people can't do from a skating standpoint, from a puck moving standpoint. Still really young at 22 and really young when you've been trying to evaluate him with a team that has not been very good and has not been very defensively responsible and has not gotten a big save behind him. And, it, you know, all those different things come into play. And the other thing is, if you're asking him to play a role and you've already got a Thomas Chabot who plays, you know, the offensive role, he's not going to be Thomas Chabot right now for sure. But is there a complementary role behind Chabot that can play? And the other thing is, you know, can you have two or three defensemen of that stature in the lineup? I don't think so. But if he were the only one, would that make the conversation different? So I think he's still a prospect. I think it's too early to give up on a young defenseman when he's played a small body of work. He hasn't hit 100 games. He hasn't hit 75 games in his career. I think you've got to give that one time.
Are you surprised at the misevaluation and the obstacles they put in front of him, though, Pooley? He finished the year last year with Zub playing very well. They bring in Delzato, they bring back Mete and Brown. Would you not say going into the season it should have been much more clear that whatever we may think short or long term, he is a better option than any of those three players?
Yeah, I could see that, Simmer, but I can also see supporting from around and saying, you know, let's push him and let's see how he responds to this. And, you know, it's not all, you know, here's how we're going to make you better. There's going to be obstacles along the way, whether they're created from internal competition or, you know, or potential internal competition, which isn't work out, those are going to be there. And, you know, that path is an interesting one because you can pave it as much as you want to, but it's still got to be the player that walks down the road. And you know, for him, if he's battled through those, then he's that much stronger and that much better for it. And, you know, so much of planning on paper sounds so good when your coach is in a room or management team in a room, and then still up to the players to go out and do it. And, you know, part of the blip might have been his own situation. Part of the blip might have been his reaction to the situation. And part of the blip might have been just he didn't get the same opportunity, you know, at the start of this year that he did at the end of last year. But he's continued to impose himself and continued to show up, whether it's through, you know, through their plans or through his own plans that make this all work.
You mentioned Connor McDavid. It certainly looked like an exasperated Connor McDavid that had to come out and, you know, face the music after that loss on Saturday. How do you handle it if you're Dave Tippett right now, just as far as, you know, his superstar's mindset?
Oh, boy. That's a huge challenge that he has in that locker room. He knows how much he needs them. He knows how much he's got to play them. If this were a one-off for this year, JR, the job would be much easier. But this is a record or a movie they've seen before, right? Or a record that's played before. That's the issue. And the way you've tried to address it, you've tried to address it with a veteran in Duncan Keith. You've tried to address it in depth with Cody Ceci. You've tried to address it with different types of forwards up front like Zach Hyman and Warren Fogel. And it hasn't worked. And so, you know, where you haven't been able to address it is the most important place, and that's between the pipes. Now, does a healthy Mike Smith change that? Maybe. But you still pretty much knew what you had in Koskinen coming back. And you've got a young guy in Stuart Skinner who they think is going to be okay, but not ready for the prime time playing right now. And you continue to have two of the best players in the world. And it's such a great expression on the depth of how a winning team has to be and how two guys don't do it. They simply don't. And that is just a huge, tough challenge because, quite frankly, you'd say, okay, Dave Tippett, you know, his whole reputation has been as a defensive coach. He hasn't been able to get guys convinced to do it there in a way that's effective. Or maybe the right pieces aren't there in a way to do it. Well, effective manager. Well, Kenny Holland has been an effective manager in the National Hockey League before, and he hasn't been able to do it yet. So huge, huge challenges in Edmonton right now that aren't going to get easier.
When will somebody step in, only if you agree with my statement, actually step into that market and actually tell them they're not a very good hockey team versus pretending that you're underachieving?
Yeah, great question. But who is that?
But do you agree with that, though? I mean, I don't look at this Pooley and say, okay, you know, we see where at times the teams evolve to a certain spot and you pass the torch and say, okay, take it to the next level. I look at their depth chart on Saturday night and I can't believe at how thin they are at every important area, from, you know, scoring wingers, depth forwards, defense, to not even having a legit starting goaltender.
But you look at it and you say, well, that's what they thought they addressed. They thought they addressed the depth winger part with Hyman and, you know, Fogel. They thought they addressed the depth position at defense with a Duncan Keith and a Ceci, and they didn't address the goaltending. Yeah. But they thought they addressed those in the offseason. That's even scarier to me, Simmer.
They
thought they addressed them with pieces that should be more effective than they are. Yeah. Then you start looking at the core, the root of it, and say, you know, what is the core of the root of it? Now, they've been missing Nugent Hopkins for a sustained period of time, and that was one where you brought back a player at $6 million a year, long-term or just under that, and that was a player that I thought I would have traded out of at the start of the year because I've got to change the mix, to your point, it hasn't worked. You've got to change the mix. Is the next player to change out a Yamamoto or, you know, and say, okay, we made him a first-round draft pick. He's not capable of doing it. And I thought it was very surprising to me when they kept Nugent Hopkins from a chance to change a significant piece at significant money. But they kept him, and then he tore up the league for the first portion of the league and was one of the assist leaders in the league, but now he's been hurt. So, boy, oh, boy, it's a great, great exercise in team building because it hasn't worked with different coaches, different managers. It just hasn't worked in Edmonton.
We saw the effect that a new coach had in Vancouver. If they decided to go down that route, and I would think everything is on the table right now, do you think as much as just a change in the voice could have an impact on the Oilers?
You'd have to think so because you'd have to look at every single thing. And, you know, Bruce Boudreau has done a magnificent job in Vancouver. Is it long-term? That'll remain to be seen. Are they a playoff team? I think they're still going to struggle to make the playoffs, Vancouver, despite the run they've been on. You know, so who's out there that does it? Who's out there that brings in a different voice? Well, you know, there's a couple of experienced guys out there. Rick Tocchet would be one of them. There'd be a different voice. But I don't know. I really don't know. That would frustrate me more, JR, if a different voice walked into that locker room and changed it that dramatically. That would speak more to the root of the problem in the locker room than it would to be the different voice.
Does it feel like there's something just not right with Elias Pettersson? And I've been reading that kind of in the body language situation, Pooley, for a couple seasons now.
Yes, and I've got him in my TSN fantasy pool, Simmer, because how do you think that's going for me? I did something different in that fantasy pool this year, and it wasn't until halfway through that somebody realized it. It was actually Lindsey Johnson that realized that I picked only players from Canadian teams in the fantasy pool. And so because I've played, you know, I don't know, 10 less games than every other team in the league, I'm getting hammered in it right now. But Elias Pettersson was one of my guys. And he did score 2 goals on Sunday, and that's why I know that, because he's one of my guys. But that's another one that, you know, that I really thought he was on the verge of stardom. And, you know, and something's happened there that just doesn't seem right to me. And I don't know if he is a superstar. He's a good player. He's a talented player, but I don't know if he's going to achieve superstar status.
Yeah, he is the one guy, and yesterday aside, Dave, that hasn't seemingly, like, things turned around in Vancouver, right, when Boudreau came in, and you wonder, well, is it that the players weren't getting along with the coach, and the new coach has come in, breath of fresh air, all of a sudden the players start to play for the new coach, but Pettersson, you know, statistically at least, and I'm not watching all of their games, other than yesterday, really hasn't seemed to pick up his game very much, even though the new coach has come in and had success team-wise.
Yeah, very much so. Very much. And it would be, I guess, more unusual, JR, if it was every single person. But the fact that it's not one of the best and most talented players is of concern.
All right. Good stuff. Always appreciate the time and the insight. Now, are you doing the game here in Ottawa tomorrow or scheduled to?
I am. Okay. I am. I'm on my way to Ottawa first thing tomorrow morning, and then I'm there doing the next couple games, both home and away.
All right. Sounds good. Appreciate the time, as always. Appreciate it. And we'll chat again on Wednesday.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
We are back, 8:46 here on this Monday morning, stormy Monday. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Duke Ellingson will join us. We'll talk some football coming up just after 9. Of course, we're in the midst of Super Wild Card Weekend, which has been, we're being honest with ourselves, we've had 2 Super games and 3 not-so-Super games. So we can go 50% if the Cards-Rams give us a delicious matchup tonight at 8 o'clock. 7:30 pregame show, 8:15 kickoff, Cards and Rams. First ever Monday night playoff game that we've had, and we'll have it for you right here on TSN 1200.
Yeah, and that's where a venue or a showcase for the Super Bowl, JR, right? So will the home team make it all the way through? And I'm expecting a hell of a game. And if the Rams lose, I think that'll create a big, big story in itself, or talk about a team going all in, and let's see what the old Cards are all about.
Congratulations to Marco De La Penta. Marco is our first winner in our TSN 1200 big game contest with Gabriel Pizza. Marco has scored himself $100 to spend at Gabe's. And listen, we'll give you the gift certificate, you know, sooner rather than later. We'll get it in your hands as soon as we can. But if you've got $100 to spend at Gabe's, are you saving it until the big game coming up in mid-February?
Yeah.
Or are you spending it on Friday?
I'm spending it today, Jer. Okay. I think this afternoon, honestly, what would be better? And if the kids are at home right now, now let's hope they're safe to deliver if you can go pick it up. I think a nice tasty pie. And would you agree that school pizza day, I think, was the most euphoric moment of my schooling career?
Mm.
There just was, when that pizza rolled in, and the fact I never had a good lunch, just my lunch has actually sucked. When the smell of that pizza came through, yeah, it just took me to another level. I'd never done any drugs or alcohol at that point in my life. And I just was like, man, if the rest of my life could be this good, then I'm in for really good things.
I think for me, it wasn't so much, and maybe it's because it's the first memory I have of those kind of delivery days at school. But for me, it was chocolate milk day, because we never had chocolate milk at home, ever. So those little boxes of chocolate milk, that was like the best thing
ever. Oh my
God,
I still remember them sitting in those crates, and then the lid or the little top of it was always stinky, right?
Yes, and then you get the odd one when it was spoiled. And there was only enough
delivered.
Was it all
seal tests back in the day?
Yeah, it was only enough delivered as was ordered. And so if you got one that was past due, it was like, too bad, so sad. You don't get your chocolate milk today. And I always, you know, because I didn't get a lot of, you know, I don't want to say I didn't have a hard knock life growing up. My parents, you know, did as well as they could in raising us.
Yeah.
We didn't get a lot of special things.
Yeah.
But I always felt for the kids whose parents ordered them the white milk as opposed to the chocolate milk.
It always tasted a bit sour, no matter how good. There was just a bit of a tint that I should probably not be drinking this.
Like, I said to my, and
the lid was always crusty.
Yeah.
The white milk even crustier.
But my parents, you know, they're like I said to them, I drink the white milk at home. Can I just have some chocolate milk at school?
Yeah.
And I think it was... Was it once a week that they would deliver the milk? It wasn't every day. I know that.
Once Dad got the promotion, he moved up to chocolate milk.
Well, no, he was a farmer.
Oh, okay.
There was no promoting a farmer.
Okay, it was a good crop. But here's the thing. I'll say this, Jer. This is why I still find that green grapes, although I've really kind of ruined that now, but green grapes and raspberries to me are still amazing, is that I never had them as a kid. So I would prefer that my life is like that. Just like when they say when you sign a big contract, when you're a pro athlete, don't buy the Lamborghini right away, because all of a sudden, the rest of your life, it's all downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Got to start slow. So if you didn't have good things, it just makes you appreciate them.
Yeah.
I love it.
Setting goals, right?
Exactly.
For some of us, it's just a chocolate milk, right?
And a pizza day, though. What was yours, Hammer? Come on, you got to have a memory, right?
We had Hostess Chip Day. We had Pete's Day and all that kind of stuff.
Hostess,
and that was fun.
I thought it was all about whatever that chip thing was.
What is the local chip in Belleville?
Yeah.
Hawkins Cheesies.
Yeah, Cheesies.
Wow. Now, we didn't have the Hawkins Cheesy Day. We had the old Hostess chips that we used to sell to kids for 50 cents. They would come to school with their loonies. You would ask for a tip, and next thing you knew, you had about $3 in your pocket, so you were just walking away with 6 bags of chips. It was fantastic. It was a sweet old deal. We used it to raise money for our end-of-the-year trip when end-of-the-year trips still existed.
Mm.
So I think a 5-day trip to Toronto cost every student, I think, about $60.
5 days?
Yeah.
You went on a trip that long?
That long.
Wow.
We stayed at York University Residence.
We were lucky if we went to Toronto Science Center. And that was like, I grew up near London, so that was like maybe we stayed overnight one night. I don't even know if we did that.
We had to do a death march from the airbase to Rockcliffe to see the Queen, who motored by it 120 kilometers an hour.
And there's nothing better than when you're like 10 years old just waiting to see the Queen. Like, who cares? It's the Queen.
Yeah. We went to a Jays game. We went to the Science Center. Oh, yeah. We planned this bad boy, and it didn't cost us anything.
Wow.
Nothing.
You guys had the best teachers ever in Belleville.
Hostess Chip Day.
No wonder that everybody in Belleville kind of went off the rails. It's
because
you never did no schooling. There was no schooling going on. It was a whole lot of tripping.
We learned economics and business.
I know.
That's what we learned.
I like it. Wheeling and dealing.
That's it. Exactly.
I actually saw something on the weekend, Hammer, about the 20 cities in the last year that people are moving to. And there was old Belvegas on the list. Hey?
Really?
Yeah.
Belvegas was up there. That may be kind of a little in-betweener for Toronto and Montreal, maybe some of the retirees, possibly.
Yeah. Cornwall, I think, has been a big push for that. A lot of people from the Quebec side coming to Ontario, living there close enough and getting the old healthcare.
All right, 8:52. So the Sens are back for practice today at 10:30, scheduled to be back on the practice ice. We'll see if that actually happens, given the weather that's out there right now. And, of course, next game coming up tomorrow night, Buffalo Sabres in town for what will be a no-fans game. It seemed to you guys, in watching the game in from Edmonton, did it there not seem to be a whole lot more fans in Edmonton than in Calgary?
Oh, not way
like
more.
Like in Calgary, more. It looked like. And my nephew, who lives in Calgary, was at the Flames game, and he said, I mean, they announced 9,600. He said there was nowhere close to that.
Yeah.
But weird, because both of those are the only places right now. Or is Vancouver still at 50%? They haven't played a game at home in forever. I can't remember. Anyway, they're allowed up to 50% capacity. It looked like either people in Calgary aren't interested in going to watch the Flames, or in Edmonton, they just pack them all down low and say, yeah, we're at 50%, but we're putting them all in the best seats right beside each other.
Yeah, and options on a Saturday night in Edmonton are limited, JR. So there you go.
Yes, not a lot going on, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. All right, so tell you what, the other thing that was going on Saturday, in addition to the Sens game, of course, and we're thankful it was over early because it had itself set up as a bit of a dual screen night if you were watching on TV. Of course, you could have done TV for one game, radio for the other. But we had the Sens and Oilers facing off at 10, and of course, a lot of Bills fans and Patriots fans at 8:15 going, geez, when the hockey game starts, what am I going to do? Well, thankfully, the Bills took care of business early.
First down, Patriots at the Bills 34. Snap, Mac Jones pumps once, fires down the left sideline, got a man down there. It is bobbled, and it is caught. No, Micah Hyde comes up with it for the Bills. Intercepted by Micah Hyde.
Wow, and that's the Bills network with the guy completely missed the interception. Now, I got to say, I'm watching that play. That was an incredible interception by Micah Hyde. I mean, that's a beautiful catch if you're a receiver, let alone a safety, coming at full speed from the middle of the field over to the corner to make that incredible interception in that game, which allowed the Bills to maintain what it was at that point, their 7-0 lead. And, of course, from there, they go on and demolish the Patriots 47-17 and enjoyed every single second of plowing that ball down the field 7 consecutive times for touchdowns. They were not stopped once except when they kneeled at the end of the game and included a fat guy touchdown when they were up by 5 touchdowns later in the game. Yeah. And that one was a little reminder to Hoodie for the last 20 years of you leaving Brady in to embarrass us in blowouts. Mm-hmm. Here's a little bit of karma for you, Bill Belichick.
Yeah, and I thought the tone was set before the game, JR. There was a great gif of a guy in a van doing the usual table breaking, but he went above and beyond. His elevation, I'd say about at least a couple of feet off the van, a perfect landing. Could end up being some head hitting off the ground, but he was able to execute it perfectly, just as the Bills were. And this, I hope, for the Bills fans, is like the Red Sox finally beating the Yankees, the Caps finally beating the Penguins, and now you move on and say, hey, we ended up, I don't want to say exercising the demons because they're not very good, meaning the Patriots, but hopefully they're able to go on and win a Super Bowl right now. You have to be excited.
So you are officially now on the Bills bandwagon, just so we can establish? Still undecided.
Well,
because you're a big Jimmy G guy. Are the Niners perhaps your team?
No, I mean, I like Tampa Bay as well.
Tampa,
so,
okay, good. Maybe the Packers, eh?
No, I don't like Aaron Rodgers.
Like
no, I'd be more than happy to see him lose, JR.
Okay.
Right now,
undecided. Your fandom is up for auction.
Power ranking would be, I'd go Tampa Bay, Buffalo, San Francisco. What are you going with?
San Francisco.
What do you got?
Buffalo.
On your sub-favorite list.
Well, none of my sub-favorites are in the playoffs any longer,
okay.
So I'm going deep depth. Who do I want to win? Let me go through it now. Well, I picked the Bills and the Rams to be in the Super Bowl, so if I just wanted to sort of brag about getting the Super Bowl right, I could cheer for those two teams. You know what? I wouldn't mind seeing the, you know, if I'm going completely underdog, which is what I do when my teams aren't in it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe become a Cincinnati Bengal fan.
You want to talk about
a team that is down in the dumps.
Yeah.
Cincinnati Bengals are about as low as you can go.
Well, 31 years ago, and they had a picture there, how life has changed and the world has changed. Post-game, when they won, there's Sam Weish on the field, and who do you think's interviewing him?
I'll go O.J. Simpson.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's and you think of the hard times and growing up, God, we got a fair amount at that time, JR, of very good Cincinnati teams with Boomer Esiason, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was.
Well, they went to Super Bowl twice. Yeah. They lost to the Niners twice.
And the memory I also have as a kid is between Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, and Cleveland. I just remember watching the games in the cold weather and thinking, I think they're playing on cement, right? You know,
those old baseball stadiums.
Oh my God! And yeah. even some of the first football stadiums were just, you know, that old turf, just like it was here in Ottawa, was, you know, nothing more than a light layer of carpet on concrete.
All right, so the Bills are going on. And they will play the Kansas City Chiefs in a fantastic matchup, rematch of the AFC Championship game last year. That is the final game coming up next Sunday night in primetime for the Bills and the Chiefs. And the Patriots, of course, are going home to lick their wounds and thinking about 2022. So, Bill Belichick?
Congratulate Buffalo on the win tonight. They did a great job. We just couldn't keep up with them tonight. Just couldn't do much anything.
Okay, no, I was looking for the 2022 Bill Belichick. Is Bill Belichick coming back in 2022? Here we go.
How you feel about coaching? I'm just listening to you. It sounds like you're sort of ready to turn the page to 2022 and sort of go through the process. Is it safe to say this is still something you want to do in 2022?
No, that'd be accurate.
There you go. There you go. Bill's back in 2022. Yeah, I'm saying that's accurate. I'll be back in 2022. Yeah. So does not suffer fools gladly. No. Not that a reporter friend is necessarily a fool, but there we go. Bill Belichick. So now you're at most times, I think, a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
Still will be next year.
Yeah.
So are you sold on Mac Jones as a quarterback that could potentially win your favorite team a Super Bowl eventually?
I think under that coaching staff so far, what I've seen, JR, and I guess you put it into more of a game manager. But for a first-year guy, he has the IQ, appears to have enough of an arm as that evolves, need a little more around him. But, yeah, I think they've got that. As to how long it's going to take, we'll see. But, no, I like him. He can think the game, and I think we just see more and more that give me that over necessarily a guy that can razzle-dazzle and throw the ball a million miles. He very much handled that, much like watching Justin Herbert, and you certainly watch Burrows, and not that he's on their level, but when you get it early on and can even manage a game, I got a lot of respect for that.
And not that I didn't watch the second half, because once it became a blowout, but I actually thought, and look, he threw a couple of picks for sure, but for a guy playing in his first playoff game in completely adverse weather conditions, it was extremely cold. As a Florida guy, went to school in Alabama. I don't think he's played a lot of games, if any, in temperatures that cold. I actually thought he played reasonably well. So for the reasons that you explained, I think is he going to be a superstar? Is he going to be the next Tom Brady? No, he's not going to be. But is he good enough to look like he can be your quarterback of the now and the future? Yeah, I think so. I think I think it looks like the New England has found themselves a quarterback, which is, as we've seen, as the playoffs played themselves out this weekend, how many teams can actually say right now we feel good about our quarterbacking, especially the teams that are eliminated? Like, I'm a Philadelphia Eagles fan, and I had doubts about Jalen Hurts going into the game, and they may bring him back next season, but he didn't do himself any favors the way he played yesterday. Yeah. So Philadelphia, right, there's a prime example right there of a team. And you can have a great rest of the roster if you don't have a quarterback, if you don't solve the quarterback question. The NFL has changed, and you cannot win now without having an excellent to great quarterback. Mm-hmm. They've changed the rules so much now, it favors the offense so much that you need to have you need better than good. You need very good to great quarterbacking now to win a Super Bowl. And ultimately, if you're building your team and not taking back care of the quarterback position, putting somebody in there who can win it, then you're eventually just going to lose, and you're going to get fired, and somebody else is going to take over. You got to solve the quarterback. And maybe Seattle can give us a little Russell Wilson action in Philadelphia. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Carson Wentz may be available as well. And you go to the
question. Been there, done that.
Yeah, no, but and you say that, JR. Could you imagine, and again, probably the most, I won't say selfish, but the biggest divas in football are receivers. It is simple when you go to watch a game like yesterday, and they were trying to be kind to win the broadcast, but that's one maybe you should have made. And, maybe you should have made that one. You watch Cleveland play, it's the same thing. The fella just chucks the ball all over the place, and the receivers know it, and just how pissed off they get, and that, hey, I'm only going to get two or three looks in a game. And then you turn on, and I had not watched Hurts play, so that was one contrast. But I've watched a little bit of Cincinnati. Watching Joe Burrow throw the frickin' ball, it's like watching a pitcher. Like, he just throws the thing right down the middle. It's got a bit of a drop on it that goes right into the receiver's arms, right? And, you know, it's just the difference of that, as you say. Like, you don't have much of a chance as a team, and how demoralizing it is when you can't make a simple play.
No, for sure. For sure. All right, so again, Monday Night Football wrap up the Super Wild Card weekend tonight here on TSN 1200 with kickoff shortly after 8 o'clock. We'll talk more football with Duke Ellingson. He will join us coming up just after our top of the hour update. The latest news in sports is on the way. More on the Sens as well, coming off a big weekend win in Edmonton with a busy four-game week ahead. We'll have that for you coming up next hour as well as we roll on here on a stormy Monday morning on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.